Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. It has been a day of wet and wild weather as yet another El Nino storm wallops our region, and we'll have some details for you as well as a forecast on today's show. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including the death of a former First Lady, highlights from the Democratic debate in Flint, Michigan, and more. Here in East County, we'll tell you about a local fire district that's just approved doubling the cost to build a new fire station just 1 mile from a station in a neighboring district. Plus, we'll tell you about some hearings coming up across East County to get public input on a controversial redistricting plan in the Grossmont Union High School District. Now, if you've purchased a monthly pass for the trolley or bus on MTS, the security of your credit card or ATM card may be compromised, and we'll have details. Then on sports, Liz Alper will have the latest news from the Padres. On our agricultural report, hear about urban agricultural incentive zones approved by San Diego's City Council. From Public News Service, we have a report on how overfishing has devastated sardine populations off the West Coast and how that in turn is causing declines in sea lion populations and other marine mammals. The County Department of Environmental Health is warning swimmers and surfers to stay out of the ocean for the next few days, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with Kenneth Anderson, director of the Gospel Music Choirs at UCSD and Grossmont College, as well as the Martin Luther King Choir. He'll be sharing some fascinating facts about the history of gospel music and the UCSD Gospel Choir, which was once the second largest choir in the world. We'll have all these stories and more for you on today's show, so stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Thunderstorms and heavy downpours have been pummeling the San Diego region throughout the day on Monday with rain, snow, hail, and strong winds. The latest El Nino storm isn't over yet. More rain is forecast to continue Tuesday morning, with snow levels expected to drop to 4,000 feet overnight. The storm, coupled with high tides, is projected to result in waves up to 15 feet high in some coastal areas, so take care. The storm caused numerous power outages, including Lemon Grove in East County and the College area, as well as parts of North County and some coastal communities. Melissa Masija at 10 News tweeted, "Thunder outside sounded like Godzilla was running the 40-yard dash." The storm led to brief flooding in the College area, and rain slicked highways across the region, causing numerous traffic accidents. The deluge has brought much-needed rain, but relief from wet weather woes is in sight, with sunny skies forecast to return by Tuesday afternoon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, March 7th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Our national rundown includes a variety of topics, including the nation mourns a former First Lady, a look at what happened over the weekend in the race for the White House, and a new tactic to help domestic violence victims puts information directly in their hands. Our top story, former First Lady Nancy Reagan died Sunday at the age of 94. The Reagan Library said in a statement that the cause of death was congestive heart failure. The widow of former President Ronald Reagan was 94 and served as First Lady from 1981 to 1989. She was known for her work in combating youth drug abuse through the Just Say No campaign. Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders faced off in a Democratic presidential debate in Flint, Michigan last night ahead of Tuesday's primary in the state. Both pledged support for the city when asked if they were using the water crisis there to score political points.
I think the fear, and the legitimate fear, of the people of Flint is that at a certain point the TV cameras and CNN is going to disappear.
I will be with Flint all the way through this crisis, in whatever capacity I am, and if I'm president, it will always be a priority for action from me.
Sanders won Maine's caucuses on Sunday, a day after winning the caucuses in both Kansas and Nebraska. Clinton also grabbed a victory Saturday, beating Sanders in Louisiana, which allowed her to amass more delegates and continue to expand her delegate lead. With Republican candidates, Marco Rubio collected all of Puerto Rico's delegates Sunday, but still lags far behind rivals Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Whether it was the foul smell and brown color or the resulting rashes and hair loss, many Flint residents were immediately concerned after the city switched its water source in April 2014. But it was a study months later that finally opened eyes. Pediatrician Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha's discovery of what she calls a frightening increase in lead levels in the children of Flint is credited as a pinnacle moment in the controversy. But she says those who fought from the start are the true heroes.
They messed with the wrong mamas. Leanne Walters, her lead level in her water exceeded toxic waste levels, and she never stopped fighting. Another strong mama, Melissa Mays, mobilized a lot of the grassroots support. Another amazing woman, Naira Sharif, a community activist. The mayor, Karen Weaver, she's declared the state of emergency.
She contends it was the actions of these women along with other folks on the ground that finally got the ball rolling on the government's response and elevated the crisis into the national spotlight. Flint is hundreds of miles away from North Carolina, but images of brown water coming from kitchen taps and tales of illness in kids and adults are prompting talk about water quality in the state. Stephanie Carson has more on why the Tar Heel State's water supply has extensive protection.
Fortunately, high-quality water is in plentiful supply in North Carolina, particularly in areas west where land conservation groups have protected 31,000 acres in the last 5 years, and the water that flows on the land and through it, according to Jessica Lagas with Blue Ridge Forever.
One of the major goals of land conservation is protecting clean water for everyone. As we've seen in Flint, when you don't have clean drinking water, it's completely disruptive to life. It's one of our basic needs as humans.
Lagas says 1 inch of rain equates to a gallon of water per square foot of land. Considering that, Blue Ridge Forever estimates that land trusts in western North Carolina protect approximately 53 billion gallons of clean water a year. Because land trusts offer protection from development for perpetuity, that benefit is seen every year by the thousands of people who drink and use the water for daily living.
Animal rights groups are calling it excellent news. Kroger's joining a growing list of businesses committed to selling only cage-free eggs. In a statement, the grocer says they're making the change because their customer base has been moving to cage-free at an increasing rate. Earlier this year, Giant Eagle, Stop and Shop, Costco, Target, Trader Joe's, and BJ's Wholesale Club made similar announcements. Activists say on farms that cage their egg-producing chickens, the birds are often kept in tight cage wire quarters where laying hens are living alongside dead hens. Every 9 seconds in the U.S., a woman is assaulted or beaten, and the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence says one of every three has been a victim of physical violence by an intimate partner within her lifetime. For men, the numbers are also high. One in every four will experience domestic violence. It's dangerous and very emotional, and in the middle of it, victims don't always know how to get out of it or who to call for help. As Veronica Carter explains, in Arkansas, there's an effort underway to change that.
As part of Laura's Card, which was signed by the governor last year, law enforcement officers are handing out a flyer to anyone involved in a domestic situation. Attorney General Leslie Rutledge says it puts crucial information right into the hands of someone who needs help.
Hotline numbers, a local domestic violence shelter could attach their card or information to it, or the officer could attach his or her information to the card as well. It has a list of victims' rights, hotline numbers, phone numbers for them to call.
Laura's Card was one of four domestic violence laws that were approved in Arkansas last year. Means officers have to give a victim the flyer, but only when it's safe to do so and not when the abuser can see what's happening.
Flu season is still underway, and although it's been a pretty mild year for it in many parts of the country so far, there are still a few weeks to go before we're out of the woods. Being able to distinguish the difference between the flu and a cold can be crucial for certain parts of the population. Dr. Puneet Chopra at Doctors Community Hospital says the elderly, very young children, pregnant women, and those with compromised immune systems are at risk if flu symptoms are left untreated.
That specific population should definitely get checked more than everybody in the middle because they're more prone to developing pneumonia or bacterial infection. Flu can lead to death.
The average flu season lasts 13 weeks but can stretch for 20. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
A new fire station on Pepper Drive in Elk Horn will cost up to $1.8 million to build, including the land acquisition costs. The San Miguel Fire District last week approved expenditure of $1.4 million for construction costs alone, more than double the original cost projection. The San Miguel District has faced financial troubles in recent years, turning over firefighting services to CAL FIRE in 2012. The district's board approved the most expensive of three options for the new station, which will be located only about a mile from another news station set to be open in a month in Lakeside. The second station will be run by the Lakeside Fire Protection District, the San Diego Union Tribune reports. The San Miguel District has said its new station is needed to meet firefighting demands in the rural community known as County Service Area 115, an unincorporated area that's less than a square mile. It's been the center of jurisdictional squabble with San Miguel once trying to annex the area. That plan has been abandoned, and instead, the county is now proposing to have four fire agencies divide up the responsibilities of serving the small area and divide up revenues based on the number of call responses. Those agencies include Lakeside, Santee, El Cajon, and San Miguel. San Miguel would get just 20% of the $350,000 in revenues under the current plan. Not all agencies have signed on, however, and the plan could yet be changed. The new station San Miguel is building will house one fire engine and three firefighters. The board was split on its decision to approve the increased funding, with the action narrowly passing in a 4-3 vote. The Union Tribune reports that Director Teresa McKenna criticized the prior board for a lack of due diligence, including not funding an adequate septic system. Other increased costs include access for the disabled and changes to meet the earthquake safety and stormwater management needs, as well as lighting changes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
If you've purchased monthly trolley or bus passes with your credit or debit card through the Metropolitan Transit System's Compass Card fare collection system, your security may be compromised. A KPBS investigation resulted in an admission by MTS that its system is not in compliance with industry best practices for preventing fraud, such as having data encrypted, maintaining firewalls, and testing security systems regularly. All credit card merchants are supposed to comply with such requirements. A public records request turned up a contract between MTS and Applied Trust, a data security firm in Colorado, to identify security gaps and make recommendations to fix those gaps. MTS has indicated that full compliance will take a couple of years and cost $7 million or more, leaving riders potentially vulnerable to security breaches in the short run, though some improvements should be in place by midsummer. San Diego City Council members Todd Gloria and David Alvarez, both board members of MTS, have told KPBS that the security concerns were never brought before the board. Alvarez indicated that he would seek further information from MTS staff. Failure to comply with security standards can be costly, as Target discovered when its security breach led the retail giant to pay out over $100 million in settlements with customers and banks, and hundreds of millions more to fix the problems. T-Mobile, eBay, Home Depot, and other large companies have also suffered credit security breaches in recent years. Besides reparations sought by credit card or debit card holders should they suffer damages, MTS could also potentially face fines from lenders that process its transactions for its failure to secure users' confidential data. Since MTS operates as a public entity, taxpayers and transit riders could ultimately be stuck with the bills for any damage resulting from negligence on the part of MTS. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Liz Albert with a sports report for East County Magazine here on KNSJ. In an obvious choice, Padres manager Andy Green has named Tyson Ross the Friars' opening day starting pitcher. Ross was 10-12 with a 3.26 ERA and 212 strikeouts in 196 innings in 2015. This is his fourth season with the Padres. New manager Andy Green also announced that James Shields and Andrew Kashner will be the 2 and 3 starters respectively. The final two spots are to be determined. The Padres opened their season against the division rival Los Angeles Dodgers on April 4th at Petco Park.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important announcement for parents of high school students and future students in the Grossmont Union High School District. In response to concerns raised about Grossmont's very controversial redistricting plans, the County Committee on School District Organization has announced it will hold four hearings in East County to get public input on Grossmont's proposed shift to elect governing board trustees by districts. The Grossmont Board voted 4-1 to adopt a controversial map and seek a waiver of a public vote on redistricting, despite opposition from members of the public who spoke. Some have alleged gerrymandering to oust a dissenting board member, Priscilla Schreiber, and to break up a vocal minority voting bloc, the Iraqi Chaldeans, as we previously reported. In fact, our article was cited in the county committee's discussion, and board members made clear that they will be asking the Grossmont district representatives for explanations at upcoming hearings. The public can testify at these meetings and also submit written comments up until April 7th. The county's committee is expected to vote to approve or disapprove the district's request at its April 13th meeting. Now, the upcoming hearings, where you can speak if you arrive early and get a speaker card, will be held as follows. On March 17th at 6 p.m. in La Mesa, at the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Boardroom. On March 28th at 6 p.m. in El Cajon at the East County Regional Education Center. On April 5th at 6 p.m. in the Hamul Intermediate School Library in Hamul. And on April 11th at 6 p.m. in the Lakeside Union School District Administration Center in Lakeside. East County Magazine has contacted the County Board of Education to ask why it didn't schedule a hearing in Alpine, which is the community that has voiced the most concerns over losing its vocal supporter of an Alpine high school through redistricting. If you share that concern, you can contact the County Board at 858-292-3515.
You're gonna keep 'em down on the farm after
The San Diego City Council has unanimously approved an urban agricultural incentive zone, a program that will help expand community access to fresh produce through a property tax incentive for urban farming on vacant, blighted land. The new program will provide communities throughout the entire city an economic tool to incentivize the development of community gardens on eyesore properties and bring community gardens to neighborhoods where fresh produce is in short supply. The proposal was authorized by Councilman Scott Sherman. An urban agricultural incentive zone reduces the property tax of a participating parcel owner in exchange for at least a 5-year contract for use of the land for urban agriculture. Properties must be between a tenth of an acre and 3 acres, with the entire property dedicated for agriculture. The new measure is made possible by State Assembly Bill 551, enacted in 2013. Councilman Sherman issued a press release after the measure's passage, stating, "I appreciate the support of my council colleagues for approving my measure that will incentivize the development of urban agriculture in all San Diego neighborhoods, as well as give residents and property owners an additional tool to transform blighted property in their communities." Board of Supervisors Chairman Ron Roberts says that urban agriculture has the potential to expand economic opportunities and help fight against obesity and diabetes. He adds that he hopes to see other cities in the region follow suit, and he expects a similar incentive measure to come before the county supervisors in the next 3 months, KPBS reports. Eric Larson, Executive Director of the San Diego County Farm Bureau, concludes, "The new program will not only bring much-needed produce to communities in need, it will also help introduce the joy of farming to those who may have never had the opportunity to grow their own produce." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A new federal assessment shows the population of sardines off the West Coast has continued to plummet. It's a third lower than last spring, even though the entire sardine fishery was closed in 2015. The news means the fishery is very unlikely to reopen until at least 2017. Jeff Schester, Ph.D., with the nonprofit advocacy group Oceana, says scientists have been warning the Pacific Fishery Management Council and the National Marine Fisheries Service about severe overfishing for years.
They warned of a population collapse, and the fishery management body basically turned a blind eye and continued moving forward with business as usual. And now they're blaming ocean conditions for this collapse.
Schester says the population was collapsing before ocean warming caused by El Nino. Scientists now believe the sardine population is down 93% since 2007, and it's starving species such as sea lions and pelicans that feed on the sardines. In 2015, 3,000 sea lions washed up on shore, and researchers estimate that in recent years, 70% of sea lion pups have died. Schester says the situation would be even worse if they hadn't closed the fishery last year, but it was still too little too late.
When fishing pressure occurs during a decline, which is exactly what happened here, it puts the stock at such dramatically low levels that it impedes recovery potentially for decades.
Schuster adds that fishermen, mainly in Monterey, Santa Barbara, and Los Angeles, have had to switch to catching squid and anchovies, and those species are now facing population pressures. From 2009 to 2014, California fishing crews brought in an average of almost $4 million worth of sardines per year. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Department of Environmental Health has issued an advisory for the coastal waters of San Diego County due to the recent rainfall. Swimmers, surfers, and other ocean users are warned that levels of bacteria can rise significantly in ocean and bay waters, especially near storm drains, creeks, rivers, and lagoon outlets that discharge urban runoff. Urban runoff may contain large amounts of bacteria from a variety of sources, such as animal waste, soil, and decomposing vegetation. Activities such as swimming, surfing, and diving should be avoided in all coastal waters for 72 hours after the rain. This includes all coastal beaches, all of Mission Bay and San Diego Bay. Elevated bacteria levels can persist after a rainstorm depending on the intensity of the storm, volume of runoff, and ocean and current conditions. The Department of Environmental Health has also issued a water contact closure for the ocean shoreline at the Tijuana Slough National Wildlife Refuge and Borderfield State Park due to the potential for sewage-contaminated flows from the Tijuana River to enter the United States. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
This is Tasha Matthews on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio. We have a special guest with us. Professor and Pastor Kenneth Anderson is Associate Pastor at Grace Church San Diego. He currently directs the Gospel Choirs, UCSD Gospel Choir, Grossmont College Gospel Choir, and the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir in San Diego. He does music workshops twice a year throughout Denmark and Holland. He has performed throughout Denmark, Holland, Germany, Prague, Salzburg, Italy, specifically Venice, Florence, and Rome, and the Vatican. He has performed in a myriad of theatrical roles in his lifetime. He has won Teacher of the Year at UCSD four times. He has a number 5 rating in 2015 on Rate My Professor and the number 3 rating in 2014 out of 1.8 million college professors from America, Canada, and the UK. Please welcome Kenneth Anderson. Hey, Kenneth, how are you today?
Good to be here, Tasha.
Awesome. So I have some questions for you. First off, how has music impacted your life?
Well, music has been a part of my life pretty much all of my life. Mm-hmm. Since the time I was 4 years old and I learned my first song, and I was 6 years old when I started playing in public at church and became the choir director of the children's choir when I was 14 and head of the music program when I was 17. And even though I thought it would be accounting or engineering or something else like that, things just worked around. I haven't actually applied for any position. I was called for these positions at elementary school to teach music to the children, and then UCSD offered me the job at for the gospel choir, and I was invited as a guest conductor for what was then an annual choir happening with the MLK choir, which is common around the nation to have a Martin Luther King choir where the funds go to benefit scholarships for high school students. Only this time, this choir wanted to become a regular choir. We organized and became a regular choir. I was also called from Grossmont College, right there. So music pretty much has taken over my life.
Wow.
And has been my life.
That's incredible. Yeah. To segue into that, what began your career in becoming a pastor?
As far as becoming a pastor, that's just a call I've always known. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something where I was going to school with the goal of becoming one. And I often said, I was a pastor waiting to be posted, just like a soldier doesn't become a soldier because they put them into battle, but they've been prepared as a soldier and now they're ready to go to battle. And I just knew that that was in my heart, the skills that the Lord gave me with people and the love for the word, the love for him, mm-hmm. and the love for his word, and the love for people. So I've always known, it's always been a natural part of my life in some pastoral capacity, even without being over a church or behind a pulpit. It's always been that way with my friends in school and people I meet. And so that's another aspect of my life that has just sort of played itself into my existence. And wasn't planned.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Like, I grew up wanting to become a writer, and that was like a calling to me my whole life. So it makes sense. I totally understand that. That's cool. So what is an interesting fact about gospel choir at UC San Diego, or interesting facts?
Interesting facts about UCSD gospel choir. I would say some of the most interesting facts is the fact that I don't know when I first became the teacher of the class. It actually began, I believe her name was Tommy Smalls, a woman mm-hmm. from Calvary Baptist. And I believe some of the young people at UCSD knew her, and they started the gospel choir as a club. And then Cecil Lytle took it over, Professor Cecil Lytle, and it became an actual class. Following him was Reverend Joseph Slade, and then behind him was Reverend Glenn Jones, and behind him was Dr. Rose Buchanan. And then 20 years between them. And then I came on, and I've been there ever since. This is my 27th year. When I first got the class, my goal was for it to grow to 200. But I had 370 by the end of the quarter. I mean, by the end of enrollment for that very first quarter. I said, well, and I never imagined. And every quarter, it grew by 200 or 300 until it maxed out 4 years later at 1,627. At that time, it was the second largest regularly performing choir in the world that we could find. There was one choir larger, a United Methodist Pentecostal Church in Brazil. And if UCSD had let me alone, I'd have had them in another couple of quarters.
Yeah.
But the school decided that was too many students for one teacher, and so they limit the class to 800 now. But it's still the largest class in the history of colleges and universities.
Wow, that's awesome. What is it like to prepare for each quarter of gospel choir class at UC San Diego?
I get asked that question a lot, especially since I have a lot of groups to direct. And part of the gifting, I'm able to hear a song and learn it. And I can change the key and I can arrange it on the spot. I think if I had to prepare, as is what's considered to be traditional preparation, then I'd be in trouble mm-hmm. and probably be stressed. But sometimes there's a song I want to teach, and I'm listening to it on the way to rehearsal. Or I didn't have time to listen to it, so I'll play it for the choir. And while the choir is enjoying the song, they don't realize I'm learning the song. And then I teach it. So there's not a lot for me to do in the way of preparation other than finding the music, of course, deciding on it. Many times what my choir is doing with the music at that time dictates how I'm going to arrange it to make it work for them.
That's cool to have that gift of being able to teach it like so profoundly and have that gift within you. It's awesome.
I'm very thankful for it, that's for sure.
Yeah. What's like the most memorable experience you've had teaching gospel choir in general?
Oh my gosh. And 27 years, there are an awful lot. One of my favorite stories is of a young man whose mother contacted me to say that he had been trying to come into my class for a year and couldn't get himself to go through the door. So I went to meet him after his math class and at UCSD, and we talked. And that third quarter, I got a note in my box saying, thank you for trying, but it you know, it's not going to happen. He has, I don't remember what the condition is, but if he's in a situation where there's attention focused on him, or even in his, he's a part of a group, but the attention is focused there, it shuts him down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so he couldn't get himself to come through the door. Now, the beginning of the next quarter, there he was in class. And now I'll skip to the end of the year, because that's the last time that I saw him and noticed him. In the third quarter of that year, my CA's class assistants came to me and says, Ken, you know, there's something we probably should have told you, but there's a student who's been in this class each quarter this year and has never performed in one of the performances. But what he does is two extra lectures, because I had four lectures a night in a lecture hall that sat 400 in order to see all of the students. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he would attend two extra nights in the week for each quarter, for each concert requirement. And they said, we've just been letting him do that, but we should have said something. I don't know why they didn't think all year, each quarter, he's enrolling. And they never thought, the end of this quarter, they decided to say something about it. It occurs to them to say something about it. And I said, well, who is it? And when they told me, I said, oh, and I had forgotten. I said, I know about his situation. I said, that's just fine. The end of this story is this. The last concert of that year was at my home church, Mount Olive Church of God in Christ in San Diego. And the students were coming there. And whenever back then we didn't have buses where we transport the kids en masse. They drove themselves. My choir can easily take up all of the parking for a couple of miles around. So I always have them park away from our venue and leave room because they can walk, and leave room at the venue for people who are coming to hear us. I get to the church at our call time an hour early. The parking lot's completely full. All the parking in the neighborhood is gone. And I'm like, did I not tell them not to park at the church? You know, mm-hmm. I'm going in there to have them all go to their cars and move. I go in the church. The church is half full, but there's only one student from UCSD that's present at the time. And it was him.
Yeah.
The church was half full with his family. He had decided that he had been in this choir and rehearsed all year long and missed all these performances. He said he had to do one before he graduated.
Wow.
And because he was doing that, his parents came down from Big Bear, his family and neighbors came down from Big Bear, the people in his life, the medical people in his life. People flew in from other parts of the country.
Wow.
There were people in there from the cradle to on walkers. It was just like people were coming for a wedding. And his family flew in and drove in from everywhere, filled up half the church, took up all the parking, because this kid was going to perform. And so that's absolutely my favorite story with gospel choir. And there's so many more, as you can well imagine, over 27 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's an amazing, amazing story. I guess my next question would be, what facts would you like the listeners to know about the relevancy of gospel music and its roots?
Gospel music is rooted in the Negro spiritual. Negro spirituals and gospel music are often confused and spoken of as synonymous, but they're not. The Negro spirituals were songs that the slaves used in the South to communicate through code that their path, their opportunities for escape under the auspices of the Underground Railroad. Songs like Steal Away, Swing Low Sweet Chariot, This Little Light of Mine, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, and on and on and on. Not all of the songs were coded. Somehow or another, they did come to an understanding that the churches in the South were abusing the Bible in order to justify slavery. So they didn't reject God. Instead, they gravitated towards him and rejected their owners. But most of the songs that survived were actually code songs. They were, when they sang about leaders in the Bible, especially Moses, Jesus, Joshua, even God, code name for Harriet Tubman and other abolitionists like her. They were Black Americans, White Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans who were working together in an organization called the Underground Railroad to help slaves. And there were some who were working directly with it, and there were some who were sympathetic to it, to where their homes had tunnels under their property and everything, and churches that were part of the network. And so there was a whole network up under there. And leaders in the Bible, or anytime they refer to a band of angels coming after me, they're talking about people who are coming to help them get away. And when they sang about crossing over the Jordan River, code name for the Mississippi and the Ohio River, And when they sang about going to heaven or the promised land or Beulah land, pretty much any good destination, code name for freedom. Going home wasn't about being sent back to Africa. Africa sold her children away, not only to America, but to many other nations. So many of her children were born here and did not know Africa as home. What they were talking about when they said going home, they're talking about I'm going to freedom. Because after the biblical, in the Bible, the cross is the path from damnation to salvation. For them, the cross, metaphorically in the spirituals, is speaking about the path from slavery to freedom. And so the parallel between the biblical narrative and their stories were so close that their owners didn't figure out what they were doing. And there's a song that's commonly sung in church, "Let us break bread together on our knees." Perhaps you've heard it at communion time. "Let us break bread together on our knees." And the next line, you'll learn the time of day they're leaving and the direction they're heading. "When I fall on my knees with my face to the rising sun, oh Lord, have mercy on me." With my face to the rising sun. They're leaving in the morning, heading east. It's rather ingenious, you know, and on and on and on. The Negro spirituals are the root of rag, swing, jazz, blues, American country music, rock and roll, pop, soul, hip hop, rap, and carrying on. All of these different styles. Not all of these styles have come directly from the spiritual. Some of them have come from another style, like heavy metal doesn't come directly from the Negro spiritual, but it comes from rock and roll, which comes from the Negro spiritual. So it's a grandchild, if you will.
Yeah.
You know. And the style that I deal with mostly with my choirs is gospel. That's also a style that comes from the Negro spiritual. And though there are fusions between other styles, some of them, especially around the genres of hip-hop and pop and rap and house and some of these other styles, gospel music is the only style that actually incorporates all the styles at some point or other. And gospel even includes something that did not come from the Negro spiritual. It even includes classical. Even gospel kind of grabs everything. And gospel can just be gospel just by itself, or the next thing you know, it's all mixed up with everything else in there. Swing, jazz, blues, and what have you. The Negro spirituals are the only slave songs in the history of the world to outlive the movement and become popular music, with the exception of the music of the Native Americans, whose culture and music our nation is still somewhat far behind on. With that exception, the Negro spirituals are the only music in America whose roots are actually in America. The music, people see everybody jamming and clapping and having a good time and everything, but just to know that that music comes from some really deep and dark places. It comes from, we call it Black history, and we should. And maybe more to the point, it's the history of blacks in America, because this is American history. This happened in America. This is a part of the American story and a huge part of the making of America. And so from this time of really of a dark wickedness, ashes, if you will, has sprung great, great traditions of music and culture and academia, as those who were stolen, some were stolen and some were bought from their homeland and brought here against their will, but they have become a part of the American story. And there's no discussion of the history of any of the styles of American music with any integrity that leaves out a discussion of the Negro spirituals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an incredible history lesson for our listeners.
Yes, a whirlwind tour.
It's good.
A whirlwind tour. You hear these songs, you know, people like they say, "Don't let Satan it out. I'm going to let it shine." You know, they're little cutesy versions for children, and I don't worry about that. But generally, we have relegated the Negro spirituals to kids and not really had much thought about them or respect for them because we had no idea.
Yeah.
Society as a whole has no idea of what was going on with these songs. So you got a song that says, "Oh, Mary, don't you weep Martha, don't you moan. That's a New Testament reference. And in the middle of that, it says Pharaoh's army drowned in the Red Sea. That's an Old Testament reference. So I'm sure that was confusing for the masters and just chalking it up to the ignorance of the slaves, mixing up stories in the Bible that had nothing to do with each other, but they didn't realize. Well, I'm not trying, you know, to be doctrinally correct or give a Bible study here.
Yeah.
I'm actually communicating an opportunity for the people to get away. So I'm sure the taskmasters and the slave owners are all bouncing their head, listening to the slaves at night around the fire singing, and in the morning wondering, where is everybody?
Yeah. it's like you said, it's super ingenious. Yeah. Like it's so clever.
It is amazing. For me, just as a pastor, it's amazing to me how humanity, we can be such awesome human beings, and at the same time, we possess the capacity for incredible cruelty and the ability to just numb ourselves to obvious truths and treat humans as though they were not humans. And even in the midst of all of that, somehow or another, God was able to put hope in these people, and though they couldn't see, taste, touch, hear, or smell him, you know, somehow or another, they caught hold to faith. And instead of wanting to die, and I'm sure some did commit suicide, but there are all these wonderful statements that come out of this terrible time of American history. Statements like, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on marching to Zion. Lord, help me to hold out till my change comes. I'm so glad trouble don't last always.
Yeah.
You know, just one more river to cross. If I can just hold out, I can get there. Just encouraging others. And when she was a child, she was sold away from her brothers and sisters. Families were broken up. Because family units is a very strong thing. They break them up. So she's saying, he's got my brothers and my sisters in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. And when her baby was born, her baby was taken from her and sold away to another plantation. That's why she's saying, he's got my little bitty baby in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. It was important for her to understand that God wasn't just a concept or a religious figure hanging on a wall in a church somewhere, but that he was real. And that he was actually sovereign, and that however long it took, he knew what he was doing in allowing this to happen, and at some point, he was going to put an end to it. In the meantime, I'm trusting him to take care of my family members somewhere else. And it's not just a psychological or emotional salve to deal with their situation, but it was important to them to know that it was real, because no salve is a true salve unless it's real.
Yeah.
Balm is a true balm unless it's actually real.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, this is what that was.
Yeah, that's incredible. So segueing into Black History Month, it's March, and we're airing the show on March. But just for our listeners to know, this is like paying homage to Black history, since Black history is American history. And so to segue into Black History Month, why is Black History Month so important, especially in correlation to music? And what does it mean to you?
I think it's very important because it's kind of twofold. First of all, a statement to our own children, as God had spoken to Moses to continually rehearse before the children of Israel, the younger children, the generations as they came on, how they came across the Red Sea, how this came to be, how that came to be. And so also our children need to understand where they come from. And they need to understand that what they enjoy now and what's so easy for them to get, what many of them really take for granted, was provided for them on the backs of uneducated and impoverished people with strong wills and determination to see justice done in America, to see America live up to her lofty goal of justice and liberty for all, and to live up to a statement like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Well then, and so I think it's important. I think everything with a balance, but I don't think we should ignore the history for fear of developing in our young people a resentment.
Mm-hmm.
But everything with a balance, and too much on one side of anything is imbalance. We should remember where we've come from, how we got here, and to really realize just how great. Though for our ancestors, we don't have the stories like some of the other people in America with their ancestors, you know, royalty and riding horses and conquering other nations and things like that, you know, great stories. Well, what great story do I have? Oh, I have a tremendous story. You know, we know the names Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Thurgood Marshall and so many other wonderful names we know, these people. For every one of them we know, there are so many more hundreds for each one of them whose name we will never know. Yeah. But with the same heart and courage and strength of character of any conqueror in history helped hold America accountable for this great democracy and continuing to do so. I think it's also important for other people. I think it's important to know your own people, and you should know other people and appreciate them too.
Yeah.
And that's something we say, but we have a hard time sometimes fleshing that out. Yeah. And so I think it's important. Certainly the music, gospel music for some reason has an appeal across all boundaries, even those who don't believe in God, like gospel music. And, you know, every commercial, every movie, or anything they want with liveliness, they do it gospel style. The mm-hmm. words, you know, the words are about their car they're selling or something else, but they do it the gospel style. It's permeated the American culture, the American entertainment culture, music, the music life of America, not America only, because as I travel around the world, I hear coming out of their clubs the music of the African Americans America. And they sing our music, and even rapping. You haven't heard rapping till you've heard Polish rap. And rap in their tongue, you know, or Danish rap. And rap in their tongue. But they'll always come back and say to you, but now we want to turn around and do one that's in English because it's real. That because it flows, because that's the language it comes from. Gospel music is huge around the world. Japan and Norway and throughout all of Europe before I've been, it's just huge, and people are attracted to the gospel and jazz. We have a jazz festival here once a year, a jazz week here, where the Gas Lamp District and certain places like that. When they have jazz over in Denmark, it's the whole place. You want to be a part of the jazz scene, just step mm-hmm. out your door. They have huge banners in their libraries talking about the people who are coming over from America. And so the music and the history of it, and just how it speaks to the endurance of the human spirit, but not just the greatness of the human spirit, but to understand the greatness of the one who made us and put this spirit in us.
That's good stuff. Thanks for sharing with us. And then in relationship to UC San Diego and the events in the past, what was your reaction to various racial incidents on campus at UC San Diego?
I had the same reaction to that I had not too many years ago when I went outside one night to see what all the noise was about, and there were a bunch of young ladies with their shirts off. I thought this was the wrong way to protest, but they were protesting about taking back the night and injustices and things that happened on the campus, you know, and not UCSD only, but we're speaking about UCSD since that's what we're involved with. But it hurts my heart when people are made to feel less than they are, when people are overlooked. And sometimes we don't mean to overlook, but just the fact that we're not thinking about them. We live in a day and time where, you know, we want to try to paint a rosy picture about it, but we live in a day and time where racism is still an issue.
Yeah.
It's still a problem. There are so many people who say it's not, and they said, look, we have a black president. You know, I'm just like, you know, come on, join the real world. If you think that, then you're living in a bubble, and it is. And so there are people off campus who just kind of joined in to make this worse. And I was glad that the school made moves to come around this. There's just like, you know, as far as a real response to what the school should do, I don't know enough about all of the situation to speak intelligently to that. It's just that I would think that to university campuses all over this nation, to places where there are different races all over this nation, we just need to take intelligent and sober actions to protect our people and to make sure that all of our people are treated with dignity and all of our people are treated with the same opportunities. And when we see there's a threat to that, then to swiftly move upon it and not to let it fester. I would also like to say to those who are feeling that oppression, don't sit on it and let it simmer until it boils, but speak up. Speak up. Sometimes you think by speaking up, you know, is one incident. Nobody's going to pay attention to that. But you should speak up. You should speak up and not let a thing just get out of control. Yeah. I don't know what that beast is of racism. It didn't just start in America. It's been going on for centuries. There's always some nation trying to take over another nation and enslave them. And sometimes they seem to take turns. Egypt enslaved. Now somebody's trying to enslave Egypt. And I was really hurt. I got to speak with some of the students because they were in my class. And to hear how they were speaking about how they were afraid. And I was like, who did you share that with? And then if someone did share that, what did they do when they heard a student share that they were afraid? Yeah. I know there are no, you know, there's no easy, if I could have easy answers to these things,
yeah,
I'd write the book and get rich.
Yeah.
Because we would solve this. But we just need we need to be intentional, as intentional as we are in our relationships with our spouses or with their significant others. We need to be intentional. When we have people under our care, we need to be intentional, not just waiting for something to come up, but anticipating and looking, you know, to see that, is this in place? And then when something comes up, then to address it quickly. I use this word carefully, but if you're the victim, sometimes it's hard to speak up. Yeah. Sometimes you're afraid to speak up. Not everybody's comfortable with voicing what's going on to them, but somehow to provide then a safe place of encouragement where they know they can always go without fear of some reciprocity or whatever it is that's holding them back. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to stop saying it.
Yeah. It's good. Are there any upcoming events the listeners should know about that you would like to mention?
May. We have a really big concert coming up in May, May 24th. It's a Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock p.m., Mandeville Auditorium at UCSD. As far as my community choir, Martin Luther King Community Choir San Diego, just go to our website, MLKCCSD, the initials of the choir, Martin Luther King Community Choir San Diego, MLKCCSD.org, and you can see that concert list. They're all over the place, and we have a huge thing it's an annual event we do every year. It's called All About the Blues. And it sells out shortly after we set the date. Both shows are sold out. So I can't even advertise that to you because you won't even be able to get in. And that happens every year. So you might be thinking about that for next year. We've never advertised it because we've never had to. So let you know that's coming up. And yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That's awesome. And do you have any last-minute thoughts that you want to mention?
Let's see. The one thing about gospel music, that's probably a little different from most other genres, is you can sing this music without any expertise, without a voice that would normally be turned away in an audition situation with a different choir. You can come to a gospel choir and sing. And for some reason, the music facilitates, whether there's one person, four persons, 40, 400, 4,000, the music works. Everybody can't get up there with R&B. Everybody can't get up there with rock and roll. You want to perform. If you get in the gospel choir, you'll be able to perform regardless of the level of your ability. And here's another thing. It's not a reason to keep doing this, but with this genre, you can make a mistake. You know you didn't intend to do that. The audience knows you didn't intend to do that. And they enjoy it anyway. It was a great time, and they come back. Don't try that with opera.
Yeah.
The critics will eat you alive, and no one will go to your shows anymore. And so this genre, because it's folk music, it just lends itself to help so many different groups of people not only learn about the culture and learn about the music and the contribution of the people behind the music, but also to develop musically themselves. You got some voice training going and clapping on two and four and rocking and smiling and enjoying it all together. And so we just have a great time. We just have a great time. Yes.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Kenneth Anderson, for being here and sharing with us about music and culture and the diaspora of African-American history. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure and a privilege to be here to get to do this.
All right. So thank you, listeners. Once again, this is Tasha Matthews on KNSJ Radio at East County Magazine Radio Show. Thank you for listening.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me
This is Ed Barreno with some memorable news. Researchers in Australia have been able to fully restore memory loss in 75% of mice with Alzheimer's using a pioneering new treatment. The technique uses ultrasound technology, a non-invasive procedure, to clear out neurotoxic amyloid plaques from the brain that cause memory loss in Alzheimer's patients. Sound waves opened up the blood-brain barrier for several hours, long enough to stimulate the brain's microglial cells to activate and clear out toxic beta-amyloid clumps responsible for the most devastating Alzheimer's symptoms. This groundbreaking research was done at the Queensland Brain Institute, affiliated with the University of Queensland. Results of the dramatic findings were published in Science Translational Medicine. The mice had no damage to surrounding brain tissue and performed normally on all memory tasks after the treatment. The treatment is affordable and holds promise to finally offer a cure for the devastating cognitive decline caused by Alzheimer's disease, which accounts for 60 to 80% of dementia cases, according to the Alzheimer's Association. Jürgen Getz, one of the researchers on the team, said in a press release, quote, "We're extremely excited by this innovation of treating Alzheimer's without using drug therapeutics. The word breakthrough is often misused, but in this case, I think this really does fundamentally change our understanding of how to treat this disease, and I foresee a great future for this approach." Unquote. Next up, the team plans tests on larger animals, including sheep, and hope to launch human clinical trials starting next year.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barreno, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.